Dicey Nation, welcome to a limited run podcast. I'm Jake. You'll hear me on such podcasts on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed as Highway to the Impact Zone and PTB NXT. But this is a little bit different. So what this is going to be is going to be a series of podcasts where myself and Tyler Kelly, who is joining me here, we are going to go through and run down our GWCW match list that we compiled over the last year and submit our ballots, because that was a stretch project for 2020 here at Place to Be Nation. And so we're just going to kind of go through in each episode. I think the plan is for us to cover about 10 matches, kind of go from each of our 100 through 91. And so we'll keep going and cover about 10 per episode, which would put us at about 10 episodes to cover the whole list. And we'll try and get through them as quickly as possible and try and make this, you know, a nice breezy experience. But I should introduce, as I said, my guest earlier, and that is going to be someone who worked very heavily on this project. They did a ton of legwork, was all over it, promoting it, kind of doing the machinations, however you say that, behind the scenes to kind of keep it all moving. And that would be Mr. Tyler Kelly. Tyler, what's going on?
Not much. Just living the dream, Jake. How you doing?
I'm good. So maybe before we jump right into it, maybe we could kind of both give our – I was thinking maybe we could give our sort of where we were going into this. Like, I guess as WCW fans or our knowledge of the WCW catalog of matches during this time period, like I guess what was your starting point for this entire project?
Yeah, no, it sounds great. So – my starting point, I can recall some of the major classic angles from when I was growing up, so up, you know, 85 or 80, well, probably 86, 87, 88, but I can't say that I was watching with any regularity. It was all on syndication, so I think my grandma got the channel that it was on in, you know, coming out of Kansas City, so every once in a while I would catch something. But wasn't watching with any regularity. I did start watching in the later 90s, so kind of in the NWO era, and I'll talk a little bit about that as we go through our list. And I've kind of since filled in through through a lot of the DVDs that the WWE released. So anytime they had anything to do with a WCW or the Monday Night Wars or Great American Bash, War Games, whatever, I was all over that. So I find myself kind of drawn to the style, whether it's Southern style or just a little more maybe gritty or realistic. So I've always enjoyed that. I wouldn't say I was as familiar. I found that I really enjoyed this project more so than even the others. I thought it was a little more palatable, a little more manageable, I guess, because of the time, the limited amount of time that we were looking at. So so I enjoyed being able to watch, get a more complete picture of the company and this time period. So
yeah, I was kind of in the same boat, and that it was definitely this project, probably even more than any of the WWE ones, was a lot more about me discovering this stuff, where the WWE stuff was, for the most part, I was pretty familiar with most things. I just kind of had to rewatch stuff and see where I placed it, where I would say a good portion of this stuff, especially a lot of the 80s stuff and the 80s TV stuff and all that. I was definitely watching that for the first time. And like you mentioned, the NWO era, I'm a little bit younger, so that's kind of when WCW sort of came into my my prism as a wrestling fan. And obviously I've gone back since then and watched certain stuff, but as far as growing up, the era of WCW I grew up with until they went out of business was not always, at least I guess at the top of the card, really the most you know, really concerned with having great matches. I think the previous eras before that were more known for it. So I think that's an interesting aspect of going through these lists too, and not just both of ours, but just to see, you know, how each era of WCW / NWA Crockett that we're covering here is represented. And I kind of kept that in mind as I was compiling the list, because I do try and think of it as ranking individual matches, but I do sort of play. I do kind of think of the list as a whole thing, sort of, when I'm doing it too. So I can't say that I just found my best matches and just put them in order like that. I did definitely take into account the, like, my list as like a full composition and how it all, you know, what was represented and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I agree. Diversity of different eras and different types of matches is something I always kind of strive for a little bit, or at least, you know, I kind of, like you said, I don't make it a huge priority, but I do take it somewhat into consideration.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, we'll jump right into it, Tyler. You, I know, had a few honorable mentions that you wanted to maybe give a quick shout out to that didn't make a list, but were maybe right on the precipice, we could say.
Yeah, I do have a couple that did not make the final cut, but for various reasons, I wanted to just mention. So one was a Bobby Eaton versus Ricky Steamboat match from December 14th, 1991, the WCW Saturday Night. And I kind of wanted to mention that because I hadn't heard anyone else talk about it. And I thought it fell just outside, like a high 4-star match, but it was, you know, I really enjoyed it. And because, you know, I'm probably on an island, I wanted to mention that one. Juventud Guerrera versus Blitzkrieg from Spring Stampede 99. You know, good high flying match. Sting, Barry Windham, Dustin Rhodes, and Ricky Steamboat versus Rick Rude, Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton, and Larry Zbyszko from 2/22/92 WCW Saturday Night. More Dangerous Alliance goodness, which be represented on my list and probably on everyone's list. Chris Benoit versus Too Cold Scorpio from Super Brawl 3. That was fantastic, but just didn't quite make it. And the one that this is the real reason I felt like I needed to have a honorable mention, and that is because I spent all this time doing research, compiling my list, and I go to submit my ballot, and I'm about 2/3 to 80% done, and those things always take a little longer than I plan, and we're supposed to be leaving town, and I'm trying to get this done, and I realize I have 101 matches on there, so I was very careful with a lot of things, but counting all the way to 100 was not one of them. So I didn't really have time to figure out which one do I cut. I can't watch anything else. So I cut out Vader and Steve Austin versus Ric Flair and Arn Anderson from WCW Saturday Night,
11/13/93. That sounds a good one. But yeah, it is something. Those are all for sure. One that stood out to me that you were just talking about is Too Cold versus Benoit. And to me, that almost like fits the definition for this list of sort of a precipice match, like on the borderline, you know, just over the fence match, and that it was really good. But I guess it's, you know, I don't know how much other like intangibles we had going for it, and there's just more very good than great or something. But then as I say that, what I'm thinking, and that's kind of part of doing these lists, is that they are sort of a fun exercise and torture in a way, because you're just like, these just like, I just know as we're going through this, I'm going to be like, I don't know, I probably could have left that off, and I probably forgot something much, much better. So I'm just can't wait to get through all this and, you know, beat myself up over my decisions that I made on this list. Should be fun.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was really excited to do this podcast. Now I'm thinking, well, here I'm putting myself out there to, and somebody will say, well, how you dumbass, how could you forget whatever match? So, but that's fine.
Yeah, we'll take all the hate mail. It's fine.
That's right.
All right. So let's go ahead. We'll start with your number 100. Oh, I'm working our way down. So tell us about your number 100, Tyler.
Okay. My number 100 match is Dean Malenko versus Chris Jericho from Slamboree 1998. So I think this is a good but not great match, but it's a fantastic angle. And it all started with Jericho beating Malenko at Uncensored. And then, if you remember this, Mean Gene just berates Dean in a really mean-spirited interview. Like, I remember watching that and thinking, what is going on here? And this caused Dean to kind of to just go home. And that's, they said, well, Dean, what are you going to do next? And he said, or where are you going next? And he said, home. And then Jericho is just constantly running his mouth. And, you know, this was during his Man of 1,004 holds. And he just gets Dean incredibly over in the process. And a couple months later, at Slamboree, there's this cruiserweight battle royal. Jericho does introductions for everyone coming out, and he's just tremendous. I mean, in this kind of this era, this time frame, he's really cheesy. He's kind of over the top, but I mean, I think it works great for cruiserweights, injecting some color into that. So this cruiserweight battle royal is to develop the next challenger, and Ciclopay is the surprise winner, and Juventud Guerrero just eliminates himself, just jumps over the rope, and everyone's wondering what's going on. And at that point, Ciclopay unmasks to reveal himself as Dean Malenko, and the crowd just goes nuts. They just pop incredibly, and he does that just as Jericho's hitting the ring, and Jericho cowers down and stooging. He's still wearing the belt, and it's just great. And I kind of wrapped all this into the match, really. So that loses their shit at that moment. Jericho and Dean, they have a good match. Malenko makes Jericho tap the clover leaf, and the crowd eats it up again. So as an entire angle, I think it's just tremendous work, and especially by Jericho just being a dick heel. And he got the whole thing over with his mic work and character work. And most of the time, Dean was at home. So you kind of forgot and didn't exactly remember it, but it was a good touch that kind of got you feeling sympathetic for Dean. You know, you kind of could relate, you know, so when he comes back, I think the crowd was behind him.
Yeah, there's definitely some Jericho love in this era. I even have a match coming up that we're going to talk about in just a minute. But yeah, I guess this one is for sure. I'm familiar with the angle. I guess the match, and I think that's definitely true of probably on this back end of the list, a lot of them for each of us. Like if it's not something we rated and other person did, I think a big part is just going to be some of them just fly under the radar because there's just so many matches that kind of, you know, just kind of, it all depends on, I guess, which one sort of stick into your brain at this point in the list. You know, because you're not talking about the tippy top stuff. So I can't say that this match really I remember too much about it, but I certainly remember the angle, and I definitely think that even just the storyline that's woven into the match, I think could be justify its inclusion for sure, especially at number 100, which is, you know, it's number 100. You do what the hell you want.
You know? That was kind of my logic there. So,
yeah.
What about your number 100?
So now, speaking of, just going with it, so we could kind of both talk about this one. So it was my number 100, and it was your number 99, and that would be Goldberg versus Hollywood Hogan on Nitro, July 6, 1998. This is the big Goldberg title win. Huge electric atmosphere in this one. In the Georgia Dome, a huge crowd. Goldberg gets a super long entrance, and really that is what this match is all about. The match itself is definitely no technical masterpiece. It's kind of, in a good way, sort of in a kind of abbreviated, or I guess kind of quicker feeling Hogan match of, you know, this era of Hogan, and that he does do a lot of his Hogan stuff, like the, you know, the test of strength kind of stuff. You know, just your typical sort of Hogan heel stuff, but you do get the, like a Goldberg comeback at the end. He does take a bit of a beating in this, maybe more than you would expect. So at least maybe you have maybe something in your head that thinks he might lose, but it's definitely more about the atmosphere. It's definitely one of the classic moments of definitely modern WCW and WCW as a whole, because it's sort of, you know, I guess depending on how you see it, maybe one of their last great moments before things started getting a little rough for them. So kind of this is the definition of where everything surrounding the match makes up for its shortcomings, you know, technically. And then you also get the DDP and the Karl Malone cameo. That's pretty fun. It's just a good moment. To me, it was like the definition of a number 100 match for this list.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I guess I don't totally agree. It's the definition of a number 100 match because I have 9. But I think we're pretty aligned there. So I think that this is sort of WCW's version of Hogan and Andre from WrestleMania 3, although it's a bit of an impoverished man's version because it's not as big a match. So anyone that's listening, I'm not saying this match was that big a match, but it was a huge match, and especially given away on free TV, rabid crowd at the Georgia Dome, like you mentioned. And I remember wondering at the time if they'd really switch the title. I mean, I thought they had to, but with Hogan, you never knew. And with the NWO, you never knew. The possibility of a bullshit finish was always there. But, you know, WCW did the right thing, which they didn't always do if this project taught me anything. And, you know, they put him over clean as a sheet, and just a huge pop from that Atlanta crowd. And it was kind of a really good encapsulation of what made Goldberg such a star, what made Nitro so hot during this era. I mean, you're kind of getting to the later part of the really hot Nitro era, but you were still there in the later stages of Hogan as a top heel. It was just a great moment in one of the major markets for WCW and a huge venue. So getting all that in one pick, that's how that got to be my number 99 match.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say about it is it also, like we said, just kind of representing certain things in the list, since it is supposed to sort of, to me, encapsulate WCW / you know, Jim Crockett Promotions in a way, is that I feel like you got to include some of these Nitro matches because just, you know, Nitro is such a big part of their legacy. And so I think these, you know, bigger matches are, I think it's worthy of including. So, yeah, definitely a good one. I had to get it on there somewhere. And so that's how it just screamed number 100, or in your case, 99. Yeah. So a little bit better than me. But anyway, we don't have to discuss, try and break down the minutia of why I'd put 100 and you put 99. Right. I think we're roughly on the same page. All right, so we'll keep going. So that, like we said, Tyler, that was your number 99. My 99, we will actually talk about later down the line because you have it a bit higher than me. So we'll say where you have it when you get to it. But my 99 was Dusty and Dustin Rhodes. So the Rhodes and the Nasty Boys versus Terry Funk, Arn Anderson, Bunkhouse Buck, and Colonel Robert Parker from War Games. And this is in 94, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Fall Brawl 94. No, 93. Is it 93 or 94? I don't have it on my sheet 94. Here.
You were right. 94.
So it's a match I like, but we'll discuss the details of it when we get to it because Tyler has a bit higher. So we'll continue on. Let's talk, Tyler. So your number 98 was Sting, Randy Savage, and Lex Luger versus the Outsiders at Bash at the Beach 96. I don't know if I've ever seen this one, Tyler. Oh, wait. Yes, I have. tell us why you ranked this one.
Yeah, I'm trying to recall who the mystery partner of the Outsiders was on this one. So,
I think it was Yokozuna.
Yeah, right. Jimmy Snuka. Yeah. so the historical significance of this one's just off the charts, of course. I think the match is okay. I think the booking is perfect, though. You got Luger immediately taken out by Sting accidentally, which to me just left the door open for either Luger to return as the third man, which I think I wasn't watching at the time, but I understand he was considered a strong possibility. But I think it also left the door open that maybe Sting didn't accidentally take Luger out on, maybe he took him out on purpose. But of course, that's not what happened. As Hulk Hogan comes out, turns on WCW and the fans, dropping a leg on Savage and continuing a beatdown before the classic promo. Hogan tells the fans to stick it and says it's the New World Organization, brother. And that soon becomes the New World Order. And the rest is history. Later in that same promo, I think he gets it to the New World Order. And, you know, I think it wound up rejuvenating Hogan's career and potentially saved it. And, you know, as I listened to JT and Chad going through the Wrestling War Zone, hearing the time Hogan before that just doesn't sound very impressive. But from this point on, they were ready to roll. So, this also kind of had a special place for me because I know that WWF's Attitude Era is kind of praised as ushering in the new hot era for wrestling. But I would wager that Nitro may have gotten more lapsed fans back into that product, back into the product. For me, I was, you know, as we've covered a little bit, I'm a little bit older than you and probably most of the Place to Be Nation. And so I was in college and we were just flipping around as you do in college, have a little more time to kind of surf, you know, through the table and came across Nitro. And I was in 97. So it was a little bit after the NWO had been going on for a while, but you know, you had the NWO and you've got Crow's thing and everything just looked edgy and dark and cool. And it didn't look like the Saturday morning cartoon wrestling we knew as kids. And tons of people I knew got back into it. And then later WWF, when they got hot with Austin, without the NWO angle, you know, I doubt I'd start watching again and wouldn't be here on this podcast. So for you listeners that think my rankings are shit, go ahead and blame this.
Well, I think, see, now I didn't rate it, and I would think that would be more, I feel like I would be more likely to come, somebody come after me. And I was thinking, here's the thing with these lists, because it's like eventually, it's like you just keep racking your brain, and you just got to like get something and turn it in, and then, you know, figure out what you maybe regret later. And this was one when we're putting this together. I was like looking, comparing both of our ballots. I'm like, damn, I didn't have that. I thought like for sure I would have that probably in the back end of my list or something. And sure enough, I didn't. And I totally agree. For whatever reason, I didn't include it. It could be just because I'm more inclined to think of it as a moment, even though I just sort of justified the Goldberg-Hogan match as a moment. So I'm kind of contradicting myself. But I don't know if it's maybe just in my head that, I think of it more of as a moment than a match, because I feel like the moment is, for whatever reason, you know, a little bit more disconnected. I don't know. I'm trying to think of an argument for this. I do remember it does slow down a bit. I remember watching. I did rewatch it while researching the project. And I will say I do think it does get a bit slow as you're waiting. It's a pretty long match. And you sort of, I think it does hurt it a bit that you're just waiting for that. And so it's a kind of a long match and you're sitting there waiting and waiting. And I think it does, I want to say it's like when Luger goes out, that's when it sort of gets into a bit of a lull, as they seem like they're kind of killing time, if I remember. Does this sound accurate?
Well, Luger goes out almost immediately, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, like, it's, they're just like brawling at the beginning and just kind of almost immediately. So, which they also kind of had to do, because otherwise the faces would have numbers advantage, and that would have made for an odd match, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. But for that reason, I didn't rank it, but I mean, it's hard to argue with it. I mean, obviously the only argument is if you're looking at it for 100% pure, like as a technical wrestling match, I think if that's the main thing you're looking at as you're putting together your list, I don't think it probably has a chance. But I think if you have the mentality, like you and I discussed, of, you know, you can kind of think of moment and, you know, the atmosphere of the match and let that play into it a bit more. It totally, I mean, I have no, you know, I don't have a passionate reason as to why I didn't put on the list. It just didn't make mine for whatever reason. So.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that the match itself is anything just outstanding.
Yeah. But all right. So we'll.
Your 98.
Yeah. Right? So my 98, or I think at this point, my 98 would, I picked Chris Jericho versus Juventud Guerrero, which is a mass versus title match, and that is from Super Brawl 8. So this one, like you mentioned, Tyler, I definitely want to get some late kind of heel Jericho stuff from later in his WCW run. And to me, this is one for sure. And it's one of the reasons why I love this match. Jericho is such an awesome heel in this. He's just being such a dick the entire time. Like, in the early going, he tries to get himself counted out, but not even like a, it's kind of cool because he sort of does a different spin on the heel trying to get counted. Like, usually the heel is sort of outside complaining and yelling and stomping around and is like, oh, I'm just going to leave. He tries to be like more like sly about it, and he acts like he's knocked out. So he's just out cold like a corpse trying to get counted out until Hoovy brings him back in. So that's cool. And they just have a ton of cool spots in this match, and that, and they do a good job of Jericho, you know, he kind of has his high spots, but they definitely give more of him to Hoovy doing his kind of acrobatic moves. And it's just a good contrast of sort of Hoovy as the high flying face, and Jericho is a little bit more, I guess, grounded and sort of ruthless in his stuff. And he's constantly cutting off everything Hoovy's doing. And so I really like the contrast of that, like all Hoovy's cruiserweight high spots compared to like Jericho going a little bit more straight heel. And yeah, and I also like it because the finish to me, and I guess it could be a little bit sad because Hoovy does lose and he gets unmasked, but it kind of subverts like what you expect of like the face or the hero or whatever making the comeback, because the whole match you're setting up, like your wrestling expectation is, you know, he keeps on cutting off Hoovy, but Hoovy's finally going to make his final comeback and, you know, save his mask and everything. And instead he goes to do a Rana or whatever, and Jericho just like hooks him into the walls and he taps and he has to take his mask off. And then you also get the great Jericho trolling after, like, oh, I can't look at his face. He's going to look disgusting and all, you know, he's just trolling him the whole time as the poor guy's having like an emotional breakdown because he has to unmask and like disrespect his heritage and stuff. So just for that, it's just great character work, I think, by both guys. And also it's a technically awesome match and a good little hidden gem. So this was sort of my shout out on the back end of my list to an awesome heel Jericho performance.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I think I watched the match because I knew it was on your list, and it was a great match. I definitely remember that spot where Jericho's going for the count out, and he like peeks up at the crowd, so like everybody gets it, and then lays back down. Like that's awesome stuff. And again, I think it really works for kind of the lower on the card, especially the cruiserweight title. It's just perfect. It adds some depth. I wish they would do more of that in more I wish they had little things like that in modern wrestling a little bit more than they did the last time I watched with any regularity anyway. But and I think that angle with Hoovy unmasking is good and significant too, because it continues Jericho's run with just doing great heel work. And I think it helped Hoovy in the long run.
Yeah.
Because was it Meltzer that said that he thought it was a terrible idea until he saw his matinee idol good looks or something?
Yeah, like, yeah. Like, he's like, that. Yeah, he's a great looking guy. Like when he unmasks, he's like, hey, you know?
Yeah. And I definitely remember that, thinking that terminology was a little strange, but it's like, yeah, he's a good looking guy. And that makes Jericho, you know, Quasimodo and whatever, even that much more.
Yes, the Quasimodo. That's what I was trying to think of, Quasimodo. Yeah. Come on, Quasi!
Yeah, that's right.
Good stuff. But yeah, I agree with you too. And then I think it stood out to me as a because obviously the cruiserweight stuff is a huge part of WCW, but I think I liked it because you got some high spot cool you know, cool maneuvers and moves and stuff, but you also got Jericho being an awesome heel. So we'll keep on chugging along here. So next up would be your number. So this would be your number 97, which is Ric Flair versus Sting for the world title from Clash of the Champions 1, which is the original Clash of Champions, which is a super, super famous match. We are not going to talk about it now because I have it a good bit higher. So I guess we'll save the debate on this, because I think this is a bit of a polarizing match, I would say. We could leave it at that. What would you say, Tyler?
Yeah, I think so. I've heard some very differing opinions on it. So we'll talk about it when we get to it on your list.
So the last thing I'll say.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, for sure, like when I saw it this low on your list, it like didn't shock me, I guess, is sort of, because I know it sort of has a reputation of, you know, some people love it, some people hate it, that sort of thing. But we'll sort of debate it, I guess, what have you, when we get to it. So we'll keep on going. My next match, so my number 97 was Sting versus Cactus Jack, Falls Count Anywhere from Beach Blast 92. Again, another super famous match that I would say maybe. I guess when I have it this low, I feel like I would be a bit in the minority. I think most people who did this list would maybe have it higher, like you do, Tyler. So you have it a good bit higher, so we will get to that. Yes, a good bit, which did not shock me. I know this is a beloved match, and we'll get into the reasons why, but let's keep going. One we will discuss, or at least you'll take the lead on, is going to be, so your number 96, Tyler, was the Fantastics versus Ron Simmons and Eddie Gilbert from Clash of the Champions 4.
That is correct. And so as I was watching watching these chronologically, this match just seemed completely random and out of the blue, at least from the pay-per-views and clashes. So I didn't watch all the TV leading up to it. But it was the finals for the U.S. Tag Title Tournament. But you just, you know, I didn't go into this looking for, expecting a long, great match. It is a face versus face match. And one thing I like is that neither team looks like dumb faces, even when they're white meat baby faces. There's still a little tension early. They don't do dumb things like you seem to see a lot of baby faces do nowadays. So they were really good at being a little more subtle. Simmons shows a lot of power. Eddie Gilbert was kind of a find for me in this project. I thought that, you know, he has great quickness and just really great charisma. I saw a lot of really good Eddie Gilbert stuff. So he'll show up again on my list. So the first 10 minutes or so are pretty back and forth, but they're mostly technical, kind of like you'd expect a baby face match. And tempers kind of build. You see Simmons hit his shoulder, and the Fantastics work his shoulder a little bit. So they're beginning to work as heels without really turning heel, which is something that I always kind of enjoy. And mm-hmm. fans are definitely behind Gilbert and Simmons. So, I mean, Eddie Gilbert is from Tennessee, I believe, and he's very popular in Chattanooga. So, and then about 20 minutes in, he flies off the apron and rams his arm into the railing, and he just starts selling it like it's about to fall off. So that's where the real heat begins, and there's the real face in peril. So the Fantastics just work the arm, they cut off all the hot tags. So, all that makes them heels in the match, but they're not really doing anything. They're not cheating. They're just doing all the things that the heel team usually does. And then finally, Gilbert hits the post, which is like the third time he's hit his shoulder into the post. And that's enough for the pin at like 28 minutes. So it's just before the time limit draw. And they were teasing the draw the whole way through. So, once it got anywhere near the time limit, they started teasing the draw. So I always like it when they do that. And, both the Fantastics and Gilbert have been real joys from this project. I knew a little bit about both, but, Eddie Gilbert in particular can really play a great sympathetic face. And I wasn't very aware of his work. So, the Fantastics are just tremendous. They were, they're going to make my list a fair amount. And I'm really happy with the work I saw from them.
Yeah. So to piggyback off what you said, I don't have this specific match, but for sure I shared two sentiments that you just said, and that Eddie Gilbert was a cool find for me. Cause like I said, probably this 80s stuff is, probably the least familiar I was with anything of, everything that was available to watch for this. And so definitely Eddie Gilbert, you'll see definitely later on my list. And the Fantastics, for sure. Like, they're a team that I always kind of heard about, obviously. Like, you just hear the name thrown around, but I never watched a ton of them. So, getting to watch them. So, even though I didn't have this exact match, I have them in other places on my list. And it was definitely a team where I was like, okay, so this is what, this is why they get talked about so much. Because they're really awesome. And, it's sort of, I think this one probably for my list. And as we're about to go into my number 96, it's like, this was the first one I was like, all right, what was I thinking here? When I'm looking at your number 96 compared to what I'm about to talk about. But I think I was a victim in doing mine, in that there's so much stuff, like 80s stuff, especially all the 80s TV stuff. It can almost be like a little bit overwhelming. And so you're trying to watch all these things, and there's so many. The average is so high there, like in that era, that it's almost like harder to pick matches from there, because there's just so many, and you're just like so many that are very good and getting into the great range that are just out there like constantly. It's not even on big things, it's just like on a Clash or on a Saturday night or something. So I think this one, if I had to guess, it's probably just a victim of me just feeling like I had, a million 80s matches to watch and probably not getting to it or something for whatever reason.
Yeah, I agree. And I've got, there are two matches in particular that I think I'll talk about that happening. One is one that I've that I know you've got on your list and I've heard other people talk about, and I thought, did I miss that? And one that I just almost missed, and it's incredible, but we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, we will make a list as we go of the ones we regret not putting. But all right, so to juxtapose against Tyler's, number 96, the Fantastics, Eddie Gilbert, some classics. I have Goldberg versus Sting from the September 14, 98 Nitro. And so obviously this is not like killing it on my list, but I did rewatch this. And so the positives, because I was thinking, all right, let's go back and watch this. Because this is one where I'm thinking, because obviously Goldberg has a few matches that are sort of known as being, his best, and then otherwise he's really not known much for his matches. So it definitely has a good sort of Nitro main event kind of big time feel to it, because it is a big time matchup, Goldberg versus Sting, which in typical Nitro fashion, you would think, man, this is weird they would be doing this on Nitro and not on a pay-per-view, but that's kind of how they rolled, especially by 1998. So it has a really good sort of main event energy, because with both the guys involved, I think Sting sort of keeps up the pace a little bit and tries to make sure, it doesn't get kind of, I guess, like Goldberg. Like, Goldberg has a very limited arsenal, so sometimes his matches just kind of have a lot of lulls in them. I think Sting does a good job in this one of keeping it going. I also liked Sting kind of knowing Goldberg's repertoire, and he kind of dives out of the way of the spear and lets Goldberg hit the post. It's a cool, I guess, maybe I'm grading on a curve, because I feel like in a lot of Goldberg matches, you don't always get that kind of stuff. It's usually a lot more basic than that. But the time when I was like, the moment in this match where I was like, oh, I don't know if this is worthy of the list, is when Sting goes to do the Scorpion Deathlock, and like, Goldberg like can't do it. I don't know how else to say it. Like, he just like drops to the ground, and it gets real weird because Sting basically is just sitting on his back, like flat on the mat, because Goldberg's not really elevating like you would for like a Scorpion Deathlock or a Sharpshooter or something where he arches his back sorta. So he's just kind of sitting flat, and so Sting kind of just has his calves and his ankles twisted. And even on commentary, it's like, well, he's really inverted into actually like a Deathlock at this point, because Goldberg just not even can't like properly get into the Scorpion Deathlock. So that moment I was like, oh man, I don't know if this is the greatest ever, when he can't even sit in the, he can't even sell the Scorpion Deathlock. But you also get DDP on commentary, which is pretty fun. I think if I had to guess, my main reason for this is that it's just a cool matchup and it's a cool energy. And I think besides that crap ass Scorpion Deathlock, I think that the rest of the match is pretty solid. I mean, Goldberg wins, obviously, but I just thought it was a cool matchup of two kind of WCW icons of the 90s. Sort of facing off. So I think that was the main reason, even though after rewatching it, I definitely, there's some sketchiness to it that I'm like, I don't know if this is worthy so much.
Yeah, no, I watched it last night in kind of prepping for this. And I mean, I think that the good things that you mentioned about it are very valid, though. They're two huge stars. I mean, Goldberg does what he does. You know, he's still... Mm. Spear, Jackhammer, they all look good. And he's more than that. He's not just a two-move wrestler. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, maybe he can't take the Scorpion, or selling's probably not his forte, but
no.
You can't, like, I don't think you can overestimate just how over he was. Like, it's just, I think that gets lost a little bit. I mean, we haven't, no one's been that over since Austin or Rock, I would say. So, I think because of the sheer star power, that's totally valid. And, on a Nitro, that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, and I think it's, like I said, I think Sting tries to put some things in and make it a little bit more of a match with the, Goldberg hitting the post and stuff. But a good, another kind of little late... A little bit of love for 1998 WCW. But so we'll continue on. Tyler, your number 95 was Ric Flair versus Hulk Hogan at Bash at the Beach 94, which we will not discuss because I have this a good, I would say a great deal higher. So we'll get to that one, which might be, we'll see.
And I will acknowledge I may be a little low on that one. So, but, you know, two great, great guys. So I guess the one thing that, while we keep talking about this, if it's on my list, I pretty much love it. And I assume that you're the same one.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Yeah, it's not like we're not putting, you know, we're not putting any crap on here, I would say.
Yeah,
great.
Yep.
All right, so we'll continue my number 95. We'll talk about now because it did not make your list, Tyler. You did not rate it, which will be Ricky Steamboat versus Terry Funk from Clash of the Champions 7. So my reason for picking this one, so I don't think I have to, you know, I think everyone's familiar with the two guys involved, and it definitely sounds awesome on paper, just these two guys against each other, especially in this time frame in 89, where just, I mean, Terry Funk is just I'm sure he'll come up later on, obviously, but he is just a beast in 89. It's just incredible to watch him in pretty much everything he does in that year. And Ricky Steamboat is pretty much the same. So you just have two guys in this match, like, who are kind of, I don't know what their peak would be. You know, I can't say I'm an expert on Terry Funk to know what his peak is, but just two guys just operating at a super high level. There's some decent storyline stuff because it goes back to the Flair stuff and Steamboat kind of, sort of defending his old rival sort of thing. So it's like a little underlying story to this. And it's just, there's nothing in this match that's particularly like amazing as far as it being a big moment. It's sort of just a Clash of Champions main event between two stars. And they, but it's two guys that are so good at what they do. They do. Terry is such a great heel, like insane heel, and Steamboat is such a good fired up baby face. And so just those two together, and you just give them, you know, 15 minutes or so, you're going to get something great. And you do hear like just a lot of Funk kind of just being his wild man and going for any kind of tactic he can, while Steamboat kind of is, you know, doing his face fire up on everything. They get the, it's awesome seeing like Funk takes advantage of the ref bump. And he hits the power driver outside, which is a good kind of fake out, because you definitely think that the match could end there on a count out or something, like he's just going to knock Steamboat out. But eventually Steamboat recovers, and just everything they both do just looks so good. Everything is so crisp. Every spot is so kind of well done and perfectly timed. The finish is really fun and chaotic. And I think that's one of my favorite things about this match, is the finish is basically Funk just kind of gets frustrated and he just randomly goes outside and just grabs a microphone, just hits Steamboat in the head with it. It's just so random, you know, because he doesn't go for like a classic sort of wrestling weapon, like a chair or something. He goes for like the most random thing. And just the way he goes with it, it's the little details of him like shuffling around on the announce table looking for the first like foreign object he can find because he's a nut. It's just awesome. So it's just kind of a good chaotic finish, and you get Luger coming out to save him, and just all that crazy Funk stuff you get in the conclusion. But yeah, I don't think I have to try and sell people on, you know, Terry Funk and Steamboat as a, you know, as a good pairing. It didn't go too much higher than that for me, because like I said, it never really gets over, you know, that very good to greatest sort of line. It never gets into like all time classic, but it's just a really awesome, you know, Clash of Champions main event between two guys who are like just going at such a high level.
Yeah, I don't think you have to. So Steamboat versus Funk at all. I mean, you're exactly right. It's a great match. I usually, if I have it, you know, in the 4-star range, I consider it a great match, and that's where I had it. So that fell a little lower than what you usually had to be, 4.25, and most of the honorable mentions that I mentioned were also in the 4.25 range to actually make the list, unless there was some other reason, like a Goldberg Hogan or whatever. And, you know, I had this one at 4, and I think it got pushed down as time went on, just probably because there were so many amazing matches in 89 that this is awesome, but it wasn't quite to that level. So, you know, but, you know, I'm glad you had it, because that's a great match to talk about. So,
absolutely. All right. So we'll keep going. Tyler, would you like to tell us about your number 94 on your list?
Yes. So my number 94, and I may very well be the only one that voted for this, but it is Steve Austin versus Barry Windham from WCW Saturday Night 5992. So this was right in the midst of the Dangerous Alliance. Stunning Steve had been running as TV champ, And I thought he had done a really great job as a TV champ. You know, he's not Tully Blanchard when he had his run, and he's, you know, maybe not quite what Regal would be, but he's right in the conversation with them as some of the great TV champs. So this was 2 out of 3 falls. And I mean, Barry Windham during this time is just unreal too. So he was another guy that, I mean, I knew he was an all-time great. And one of the constants, I think, is some of those guys I knew were all-time greats, they were even better than I thought, you know, and Barry Windham fits that bill. So, and Windham wins this first fall with, he does a superplex and then kind of floats over, just kind of rolls right on top for the pin. And I just think that move is amazing. So, and I have down that Randy Owens of Alabama, the country group Alabama, who I am a big fan of, but he joins commentary and says nothing. Yes. And Windham puts his mouth the first fall, and then Austin works the back in the second fall, which Austin then wins with the stun gun. So, you know, they're getting over his finisher. Didn't pay off the back work quite as much as I might have hoped, but then you get this scene where Pauly is just screaming at Barry. He's holding the belt in his face. He's being just an obnoxious jackass, like almost only Pauly can, maybe Jim Cornette too. But, you know, he's telling him he hates his guts, and then this gets a ref bump. So it leads to Pauly giving Austin the belt. And you just, I mean, everything about what we've watched on TV and, you know, from Crockett all the way to the Dangerous Alliance, you're like, oh, here comes a bullshit DQ finish. Or, you know, the heel texts him and, you know, all right, that's a good match then. But he goes for the belt shot and he misses. And then Barry rolls him up for 3 with Austin still holding the belt. So, like, all along, like, I didn't think that was the finish until absolutely hit 3. And then, you know, the baby face is triumphant, which you just didn't imagine. And Austin lays out Barry after the match, hits the stun gun and leaves with the belt. So, you know, still good heat. Just another great Dangerous Alliance match. And again, I'm probably one of the few that's going to give that one love, but it's Barry, his big victory, and that'll come into play here soon when he is the champion and defending. So.
Yeah, I feel like I definitely watched this one. I don't remember the details, like you said, but for sure, these two guys, like on paper, sounds awesome. And Saturday night in 92 is just, it's like ripping. Like that was, I think for this project, just as part of watching, because I was watching it anyway, and this is kind of a year where you had these matches where, like, even though this match didn't make my list, I could totally see a match from this era of Saturday night, because they, like, every week they're just putting, and a lot of it, like you mentioned when you're talking about the matches, like Dangerous Alliance stuff, because they just throw out any combination of the Dangerous Alliance guys, and chances are you're going to get something at least pretty good. So yeah, that whole era of Saturday night is just, man, it's just fun to put on, because it's just it's like a wrestling comfort food. Does like 92 Saturday nights, it's good stuff. So
it's all incredible. And the Dangerous Alliance, that whole 92 era was my favorite to watch, but it may have been the hardest for this project, because everything was so good, it was really hard to differentiate. So at least for me.
Yeah, so yeah, I think it's almost the match you just talked about, that I, you know, Austin and Windham, is that it probably suffers from just getting buried on so many other things that were on there at that time. So might be a victim of that too.
All right. What is your number 94?
So my number 94, we will not talk about it now, but we will very soon, before the end of this episode. And that it would be DDP versus Randy Savage, their lights out match from Great American Bash 97, which you had a tad bit higher than me, but not much higher. So we'll get to that one in a second. So your number 93, Tyler, was Sting versus DDP for the WCW title on Monday Nitro from April 26, 1999. So 1999 WCW love.
That is correct. Well, I did find 1999 to be a better year than I expected. And by that point, I was no longer watching every pay-per-view and every Nitro, and probably thank God. But I did find the matches that were recommended were a little better than I would have guessed. And this was one of them. So it wasn't one that I remembered, but As I rewatched it, I thought that was going to be one of the best matches in Nitro history. I felt like it was a pay-per-view main event quality. And I believe I only have one Nitro match higher. So that kind of gives it consideration. Mm. And I can't put my finger on any one thing that was so great, but just the pace of the match was really a lot faster than I expected. And both guys were really feeling it tonight. You know, I think mm-hmm. both Sting and DDP work hard almost all the time. So mm-hmm. he had a little stretch there right in the worst time in about 97 when he wasn't fantastic. But other than that, he's worked his ass off of the company a lot. You know, they're punching and outside walk and brawl just looks stiffer than usual. You know, the crowd is really hot. I believe they were in Fargo, so maybe they don't get a lot of events. I don't normally think of Fargo as a WCW stronghold, but who knows? They were hot that night for damn sure. So DDP was a heel after winning his first world championship at Spring Stampede. And so I have down that there was a lot of groin-based offense. Sting kind of accidentally headbutted it when he falls from exhaustion, you know, and does that whole spot. And DDP has a lot of elbows to the lower abdomen and false shots on the post when he's looking to do the figure four to the post, which I believe that's how he got Hogan out of the match at Spring Stampede. And I think that was even the night before, but I might be wrong on that. So Sting just counters, fires up, and eventually hits a flying splash for a hot near fall. And I have a lot of notes here because I kept thinking the end was coming, and it just kind of kept going. There were a lot of hot near falls at the end, pile drivers and reversals, DDTs, and then DDP hits a ball shot and tries a diamond cutter near the ropes. But Sting kind of holds on to the rope, then counters to the Scorpion Death Drop for the win and the belt. Again, there was nothing really surprising or great storyline-wise. It was just the surprise of, you know, it looked like a normal match, but it's been just better. Yeah, I don't know how to describe mm-hmm. it other. It was just really a testament to the hard work of both guys, I thought. So, and of course, DDP wins the title back later in the night in a four-way with Sting, Goldberg, and Nash. So.
Yeah, this is like this is not even a main event, huh? This is like a in the middle of the show match, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Recall.
Yeah, that's just pretty wild. But it's a Monday Night War. I'm sure it was at the top of the hour or whatever, bottom of the hour, whatever they usually do.
Right.
Yeah, but you'll get no complaints for DDP from me. Like anything from probably late 96 and then 97 and on, I'm really into DDP. And I fall usually into the liking Sting. Even this later Sting is fine for me. But yeah, I threw this one on. It was a good match. It did make my list for whatever reason. Probably, you know, just got edged out by some other. But it's a fun match. Kind of has a similar thing to me. To me, this was kind of like parallel to my Goldberg Sting kind of thing, even though I think this is a better worked match. But it has the same sort of vibe and probably, I would say, a little bit better because I could see why it would be ranked better because it's probably, I'm sure, a much better technical match than the Goldberg match where he can't sit out, he can't sell a Scorpion Deathlock. But right,
I want to make just one note on DDP since you mentioned it.
Yeah,
I thought of it. I feel like he's worked himself into being a really great wrestler because mm-hmm. I feel like he's one of the guys that had the least natural talent. And I don't mean like he was the worst wrestler ever, but the other guys I think of were jacked up and they couldn't work, but they had a great look. I don't think DDP had a great look. I don't think he had great athleticism when he started. I don't think he cut a great promo when he started. I think he busted his ass at all of that and then wound up being a great character and a really good wrestler that I've really enjoyed a lot of. So, I mean,
agreed. I think it's like a moment where he just kind of got it. Like he had been trying to put it together for so long and they're kind of finally, you know, he just kept, you know, like picking at it and he finally hit it, you know, he finally figured the whole thing out. Cause like you said, he's not, you know, the most athletic guy or anything. I think he just figured out the little things that, you know, make, right? But it won't be the last time we talk about DDP, not even in the next like few minutes. So my number 93, which maybe is probably low, and as I'm looking at it, I probably think I have it a bit low, but you have it much higher than me, so we'll talk about it later on, and that would be the Sheepherders versus the Fantastics from the 1986 Crockett Cup, which is a, we'll get into it later, but has some, there's a lot of fame to this match. So we'll spring right on to your number 92, Tyler, which was Vader versus Cactus Jack from WCW Saturday Night, April 24th, 93. Now, this is interesting because these are kind of two matches that are kind of back-to-back in that they have a match the week before this. And I thought it was funny because I don't have this one. I have the other one, and then you, or vice versa, you have this one, but not the other one. So I'm interested to see us both talk about the ones we picked, because I thought that was funny that we each picked, like, on the back-to-back weeks, we each picked a different one.
Yeah, and yeah, I kind of wish that we'd have talked about your selection first, because it happened chronologically first, and they're both, I mean, in my opinion, they're both great matches. I think both are legitimate to have on the list, but... You know, I start off by saying, yeah, this is kind of a continuation of that match where Jack's face is just beaten into bloody goo, and you kind of only see that on either the Foley DVD or mixed unedited footage, which had all the blood. I mean, of course, WCW edited the blood out, and they probably had to, but, you know, it didn't help. So, and I like the rematch because... You know, again, Jack takes the pounding and he delivers a fair amount of offense, but then he misses this somersault off the apron. And that allows Harley Race to pull up the mat, and Vader powerbombs Jack on the concrete in just a disgusting, vicious bump. And to me, this is kind of a WCW equivalent of Foley's Hell in a Cell match with Undertaker, but with a better match before the big bump, because, the more Mick Foley I watch, I mean, Cactus Jack, Mankind, I'm just like, damn, he was good. And, you know, I think of him as a WWF guy or WWE guy, but damn, that his WCW stuff, he was killing himself for very little, you know, very little reward here because, you know, follow up to this is we get lost in Cleveland, which is, you know, and I find you always hear about 93 WCW and how bad it was. Watching this, I found that the opposite was true of the match. So I thought there was a lot of really good stuff in 93. But I understand how you get that reputation when you follow up, you know, a bump on concrete, a head-first bump on concrete with his, you know, lost in Cleveland with bums. So, you know, I just for that, that bump is kind of why I wanted to get that in, and I thought it was a good match beforehand. I will say that I had originally believed that that was the one that Foley talks about in his book where he complains about, I believe it's Heenan, just kind of says, oh, yeah, that'll give you Excedrin headache number 7 or whatever. But that wasn't – that was – so I guess he took that same bump in, I imagine, I think, 94.
Yeah, because that would, because Bobby wasn't even there by this point, I don't think.
No, he wasn't on the call. It was I think it was Tony and Jesse.
Yeah, so, but yeah, these guys have incredible chemistry. I'll talk about why I picked. It really comes down to, I think, if I had to guess, maybe the thing about the two matches is, you know, it's this one has the moment, like you said, the big violent moment, which is, like you mentioned, it's an incredible moment when he pump power bombs him. It followed up with some goofy stuff. It's like it's like you mentioned, it's funny that they followed up with the Lost in Cleveland because you go from this like super gritty kind of realistic angle that they're trying to play to like the most goofy, you know, goofball wrestling kind of thing that you could do. But yeah, these guys will, I'll talk about the one I picked, the, like you said, the sort of the prequel to this, I guess, but the whole thing, the whole angle is just so well done. And we'll talk about this matchup a few times, I think, or at least a couple times more, but yeah, it's awesome stuff. So
both guys together will, and we'll have matches with the two of them on our list, I think.
Absolutely. There will not be one hit wonders, I don't think. So, okay, my number 94 was the Midnight Express versus Brian Pillman and Z-Man for the U.S. tag titles at Capital Combat. Glad I was able to fit Capital Combat into my – I think I have multiple Capital Combat matches on my list, actually. But anyway, this one, yeah, it's – you know, to me, it was just good in that it wasn't like anything super memorable, I'd say. But it's just, man, like just good faces with Pillman, especially Pillman. I mean, Z-Man's okay, but he's sort of – you know, he's all right for me. Pillman's kind of the star of that team, obviously, but just real good back and forth, great heel and face dynamic between them. And especially the thing, what I loved in this match the most was when Pillman and Bobby Eaton were paired off, because it's like two guys I love. I love Bobby Eaton. He's so awesome. And doing this list just like made me love him more and really got to see him a ton. I'm interested to see as we go through this how much he actually comes up on the list, because I don't know how much he made the list, but it was definitely doing the research. He was like you said, you know, not a hot take here, but Bobby Eaton, really good wrestler. And I just think the whole thing, like they just build momentum throughout the whole thing. It's just classic sort of Midnight Express sort of thing. You know, sort of style where they just build throughout the entire thing. A lot of back and forth, but a lot of kind of logical momentum swings that go on. And I thought the whole match just does a pretty good job of showing that both teams are well matched without it being like just 50-50. They're different, but they're also kind of a good matchup. And then sort of the Midnights kind of just work them until they can finally pull it out in the end. I thought was really good. Just like a really awesome tag match. And just like I said, seeing Pillman and Eaton, their moments together were really awesome. It's just, it flowed super well. Pillman is an awesome baby face. Like his fire is awesome. But just a good, awesome tag match and kind of a unique sort of matchup to see them against Pillman and Z-Man. Z-Man's kind of just there, I guess. I know he's kind of a guy that not everybody loves. I can't say like I picked this because of him, but he was, you know, he didn't bring it down. I didn't think so. Yeah, awesome match. I don't think you had it ranked, Tyler.
So I didn't, but I love that you did, because this was one that would have been one of my honorable mentions. Except that I thought you had it on the list, so I knew I'd get a chance to talk about it. I just love it because I love the Midnight Express. We haven't seen them yet because they're good, but they're going to play a major part on my list. And I think they're just the consummate heel team. They do all the heel things right. And Flying Brian and Z-Man are a great baby face team. I mean, like you say, Pillman carries the water there. He's the stud of the team. But Z-Man's a pretty good hot tag. I mean, he can fire up. He plays a good fiery baby face. I don't love him in singles, except you know, I think there may be a match we talk about later that I do like him in, but not a lot, you know. But yeah, I love that match. I was nodding along to everything you're saying, which doesn't come across in podcast form, but I really like this match. It was on my list until I realized, as I was trying to count up how many matches I knew I had to get on, I was like, I'm going to have to make some cuts. And it wound up being one of the final cuts. But, you know,
you have to get rid of some.
So, it would do my soul good if I had a soul. So carry on.
Yeah. So that was my number 92. I might have said the wrong number earlier, but I'll reset and say that was my 92. And so we'll go to your 91, Tyler. It was one that I mentioned a minute ago. It was my number 94, I believe, which is the DDP and Savage False Count Anywhere match from Great American Bash 1997. Yeah, I'll let you speak first. You had it a bit higher than me, so I'll let you shoot on it first.
Yeah, so I like this the best of their series of matches. I think it was the best match, certainly. So Kimberly comes out and distracts Savage, and DDP attacks from behind. So, and I made a note that Tony says if you stare at beauty too long, someone will get you from behind. So I suppose that is
right.
I don't know what to make of that, but they kind of brawl all over the building. DDP kind of throws Savage out the door, and he just kind of walks back in. Like, it was a kind of a weird spot, but then DDP just busts a crutch over him. So it worked, I guess. And at some point, he winds him with powder, and then hits, and I don't know what that was, is what Tony calls it, over DDP said. It looked like a plate. I don't know what it was. It busted everywhere. You know? And Savage starts just killing refs. That's kind of a theme that happens throughout this match. He pile drives.
It's so crazy. It's so absurd. Like
it is. And wonderful, though. I mean.
Yeah, like absurd in a wonderful, like, maniac Randy Savage way.
So, yeah, I've got the DDP takes a great shit kicking and just keeps fighting. And so I think that connects with his kind of everyman character that he had going on there when he finally did get it, like we talked about. Mark Curtis is ref number two, and he's down. And Nick Patrick comes out to save Kimberly because the maniac kind of goes after her. They go into the picnic or barbecue area, and DDP dumps charcoal all over Savage, and there's just lots of plunder shots, and I really like that portion of it. Savage beats up a photographer and slams his camera down on the floor after the mats were pulled up, and I don't have any idea what that was all about. So DDP does hit the diamond cutter, but there's no ref, and he's too tired to cover. And then Scott Hall runs out. DDP initially fights him off, but he takes a shot with the tag belt. Hall hits the outsider's edge. And then Savage hits his top rope after kicking the ref for, like we talked about, just no particular reason that I could see, you know, just being a maniac.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hall kind of throws, I think it was Mickey J, but I think at this point we've had three refs, so it's, you know, I'm not completely certain.
Somebody. He threw one of the comatose refs in, yeah.
Right. So I just thought this had a lot of kind of unexpected brawling, Savage showing that he's a madman. And then, you know, I kind of, like, I wish they had this match, but then the finish where DDP won with the diamond cutter, which, if I remember correctly, was the first match in the series. So I feel like the feud was built a little strangely in that Savage winning the first one seemed a little odd to me, but I thought it was really significant. I thought it made DDP, and both guys put forth a lot of effort. So that's why I chose this match.
Yeah, I had it, you know, so we're in roughly the same area with it. But yeah, it's pretty awesome in that it's a really good, well done feud because I think too when it comes to the match, and I think it's a real strength of the match is that both of these are both guys who are so good at. You know, Savage may be the greatest ever at it of getting like emotion across in his matches. And so I think he gets it across. They both like, I think it's like, it works for them, this kind of garbagey brawling style, because they both know how to take every little thing and like make it interesting in the way they sell and the way they go after things and the intensity that they both bring. And they both seem really invested in the fight and that sort of thing. So, because I think this is honestly like this style of match sometimes, like walking brawl kind of stuff. Can really like I check out of it if it, you know, it's very easy for me to get bored with it, and I never get bored during this match because every like they don't get lazy with it, like everything has a little bit of creativity to it. Like just seeing Savage go through a picnic table, it's so fun and crazy because it's not like something you're necessarily like used to. And most of his, you know, since he really became a big star, like seeing him in a garbage brawl, but he's like the perfect wrestler for it because he's like a maniac. And so he just goes full maniac, like you said, destroying the refs, like ripping at the rib tape because DDP has the rib tape on. So he's just tearing it apart. But he doesn't even just do it in a way where he just pulls it off one time. He really draws it out and like tears it off like he's like peeling something, which is awesome. He's so menacing through all this. He just looks super unhinged. Like we talked about funk earlier, and he kind of has that funk energy a little bit, like that wild man sort of in this environment where he just can grab anything. And yeah, it's just and another thing I love about this match is you could really feel DDP coming to his own in this match and really, you know, hitting his prime. It's an awesome feud. It's just an awesome kind of sloppy grudge match brawl. that, yeah, it's just real entertaining. And both guys are just super over. It's a super hot feud. So it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely worth like the list.
I like your comparison to Punk, and I like you saying that it was kind of a great sloppy match, you know, sloppy brawl. So I think that's a great way to describe it.
Yeah, in a good way, like sloppy in the right. best possible, like in an interesting way, which it won't be the best fun sloppy garbage brawl on our list, or at least on mine, I know for sure. We'll get
I've
some.
Got the rules.
Yeah. So, all right. So with that, I think we have one more left to talk about. So that would have been, like we said, your 91. And so the last one we'll cover on this episode will be my number 91, which is Steven Regal versus Ricky Steamboat from Fall Brawl 93, which you did not have. Just make sure I'm correct on this, Tyler. Did you? You didn't have that one on your list,
That's
did you?
Correct. I did not. I really enjoyed that Regal Steamboat feud during that time, so I'm glad you have it on there so we can talk about it, but that one didn't make my list. So.
Yeah, are you a fan of this whole run of Regal at this time period? I know some people are not super keen on it.
Yeah, so, well, and I guess I don't know what time period we're talking about, but I'm a fan of his WCW run. I think I'm neutral trending positive because I know some people think he's one of the greatest ever in this work, and I think he has really great stuff, but not all the time. You know, like I wouldn't put him for doing the greatest WCW wrestler ever. I'm not sure where he'd land. He's probably not going to be my top 10 or 20 or, you know, but, and I think he will be in some people because I've heard some people who just really love him. So.
Yeah. And even like specifically in this hair, because, you know, a lot of what he, and this is sort of the, I guess sort of he gets the title right here against Steamboat. And really the whole story of this match is like him working the ribs on Steamboat. And so I just love everything they do. I guess what I'm saying, like, especially in this era, like this early WCW Regal, a lot of it is super like hold based. Like he does a ton of like holds and stuff like that. And that's sort of what he gets into and would sort of be the, I guess like the through line of his run as champion. It's like all these matches where he's TV champion. He does his whole heel gimmick is that he just goes for the time limit draw instead of actually trying to win because he knows he can keep the title. And so a lot of it is just kind of grinding down his opponents, but it always comes off as so like different than everything else you're seeing that it always just stood out to me. So I really enjoy it. This is kind of in that wheelhouse. Like he's just, it's just him being so good at working over, you know, working over guys and making his, you know, all of Regal stuff looking so interesting and dynamic and different, and all his holds look good, and just him going after the ribs, and obviously Steamboat is like a great face, so he's just selling everything perfectly. It's just an awesome match and just a unique matchup of you know, I just love the styles at play here. I can't say it's like some all-time class or something, but it was just something about this matchup just felt right to me, and I don't think a lot of people necessarily love this match. I'm not sure if you watched it, you know, as you were doing the research, Tyler, or what your thoughts on it. And I know it's not considered like a classic or anything. I don't think it is, but I just thought it was really good. And I just love the way these two guys' styles just go together so well.
Yeah, so I did watch it during the research, and kind of what I don't remember the match individually as much as I remember just kind of the through line, because that, yeah, the story of the match is that Regal works the ribs. The story of him getting his ribs injured, as I recall, was from a previous match with Regal, like the night before, I think, or I'm sure it wasn't really the night before, but maybe it aired the night before. And Sir William, which was Bill Dundee of Memphis fame, hits him with the umbrella, or maybe Regal hits him with the umbrella. So, but anyway, they injure his ribs, so they kind of know, you know, go for that. And you're right, there's just nobody better at the holds and, you know, the technical aspect, working body parts. I do think that Regal is one of the greatest TV champions just because of what you said, how he'd often go for that time limit draw. So, and I think Regal, Arn, Tully, and Austin kind of all stood out to me, is they really kind of milked that and would provide great matches on TV, often go for the time limit draw. He was, and I think Regal was a good fit for that.
Yeah, I think the knock on maybe this match is that it's maybe a bit too long for what it does, but I really like the storytelling in it. Like, I think there's even like a spot where he can't do the crossbody because he's too hurt. And so, and then it eventually just catches up to him and he can't win the match because he's just too, you know, too injured. So, yeah, it was good. And I want it on my list, maybe on the back end. But all right, Tyler, I think that will wrap us up for this episode, as we both covered our 100 through 91. And so that'll kind of be the goal as we continue on. So that will put us at, you know, we're probably looking at about 10 episodes, it would seem, unless we really decide if we want to shorten it, if we want more time or whatever. But yeah, I thought this was fun. This is a good start, Tyler, to us revealing these lists.
Yeah, I had a great time. So thanks for having me. And we'll look forward to the next chapters.
So maybe we should, at the end of these, plug what the new stretch project is, Tyler. What do we have in 2021 as far as our yearly stretch project?
Yeah, so in 2021, we'll be doing the greatest WCW wrestler ever project. So similar to the original project where we did the greatest WWE wrestler. And it kind of is a great fit because we're just coming off the greatest WCW matches project. So it's kind of a natural fit. We've just looked at all the matches. So now we can look at the wrestlers and we include the great matches. We also want to include promos, character work. Let's see. I'm trying to remember the NJPW. So I believe it was nuances, jump up, promos, and then work rate.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm recalling the rules and the criteria correctly, this will also include managers. So, which is a bit of a departure from the original GWWE. And I kind of feel like for WCW, that's particularly appropriate because I feel like they were maybe more involved than they were in WWE. So, now, that I suppose that's arguable because there were some times in the 80s and maybe early 90s where they were a big part of the WWF at that time. But you can do your research, and the Facebook page that was the GWCW matches is now the GWCW wrestler page. So it should be the same Facebook page. If you weren't on it before, search for it, search out the Place to Be Nation, and we can hook you up.
Awesome. So be sure to go and join that group, do the project. It's real fun. If you, even if you didn't do this one, if you're listening to us talk about these, maybe hopefully we can get you fired up. And if you did do this one, you kind of did a lot of the legwork, I would say, by watching all the matches to do this ballot, because you kind of seen most of the guys who are probably going to be maybe your candidate. So you kind of are familiar with their repertoire. So maybe you can put something together, but definitely do it. It's a ton of fun. Like I said, it can be stressful at times, but it's a ton of fun just trying to put it all together and do all the research. I try and think about much more about the journey and not necessarily like kill myself too much about the final product and just kind of enjoy the journey of looking through all this. But so Tyler, I think maybe we could throw up our, as we go through these for each one, we could throw up whatever ones we talked about up on the old Place to Be page up on Facebook, which is kind of up and running again. It's kind of been rejuvenated in recent times. So go and check it out there. And Tyler, you and I will be back to cover our number 90 through 81 on our next episode.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I just want to echo what you said about the journey being the really important thing. So sometimes the final cuts of the list can be stressful, but really the journey's not even over. So I'm looking forward to some matches that maybe you have on your list, or that some others that are doing and will do podcasts revealing their list might mention. So if there's something I missed in this go round, I'm really excited about taking another look at it. So that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's real fun to discuss. Yeah, it's very, It's a good time. So, but with that, so come, we'll be back fairly soon, I would think, and we'll be back to break down numbers 90 through 81. So until then, I'm Jake and Tyler. Oh, well, I'm not Jake and Tyler. I'm Jake and Tyler's with me, but you get the idea. So you for episode two. Yeah, we'll swap identities, whatever. But check us out next time. That's it. Bye bye. You're like a dream come true. Two, just wanna be with you. Three, girl, it's plain to see that you're the only one for me. And four, repeat steps one through three. Five, make you fall in love with me. If ever I believe my work is done, then I'll start back at one. It's so incredible the way things work themselves out. And all emotional once you know about